This week's episode of Bursting the Bubble was recorded earlier last week, prior to the decision to suspend on-campus classes and activities in response to the current public health situation. Please visit the college website, www.houghton.edu, for up-to-date information on any of the events or activities mentioned in this program. We look forward to the time when our shared spiritual life activities can return again to campus.
Welcome to Bursting the Bubble, the podcast from Houghton College, where each week we share a devotional thought, think bravely and truthfully about interesting things, and give you a flavor of this beautiful, fascinating place we call Houghton. I'm Michael Jordan.
And I'm J.L. Miller. And this week we're going to do behind the scenes at Houghton Chapel. We figure we're here every week with the dean of the chapel. Let's uncover the secrets of what's going on at chapel. But first, our own dean of the chapel, Mike Jordan, is going to lead out with the devotional thought.
Well, thanks, JL. I've shared with you previous episodes that I'm working on a sermon series called Made New. And so I've been thinking a lot about that. And as I've been kind of pondering where that's going to go as I'm preparing a message for next week, there's a quote that I have come across. I've seen it many years ago. We use it at morning prayer sometimes. But it's from Thomas Merton, and it's a quote that I find kind of important. So I'm going to share it with you now, and then a few thoughts about it. The quote, "Preaching God implies silence. If preaching is not born of silence, it is a waste of time. Writing and teaching must be fed by silence, or they are a waste of time. There are many declarations made only because we think other people are expecting us to make them. The silence of God should teach us when to speak and when not to speak, but we cannot bear the thought of that silence, lest it cost us the trust and respect of others." So as I'm prepping for this week, talking about how when we are made new, we know when it is time for us to stand up and speak and when it is time for us to sit back and listen. And I'm kind of partway into the sermon. I'm not exactly sure how I'm going to approach it here as I'm going, but this quote is definitely part of it. And part of that is the fact that I have always been a talker. And it probably doesn't surprise you, JL. But
all of my report cards in elementary school said, JL talks too much.
Yeah. Yes, I talked too much too when I was a kid. And I talked too loudly. That was the other thing. I had this voice that projected, and my parents would always say things like, do you realize how loud you sound? And I, of course, didn't really realize how loud I sounded. But part of that, you know, being a kid and feeling comfortable with words, the fact that I could make people laugh with words, the fact that I could make people think with words, it meant that I wanted to talk all the time. When I was talking, I was kind of in control of the situation. And so I realized as I grew older that I used talking to kind of cover up silence. I talked when things were uncomfortable. I talked nervously over silence. And so anytime there was an uncomfortable silence, I would want to fill it with words. I don't use this word lightly. I think I talked compulsively when I was a kid. And so in the last few years, I've realized that I need to put my own words in perspective. And a part of that has been appreciating that I am gifted at using words. I love words. I still love words. Words are part of my gift. But part of what I've been learning is that my words by themselves don't heal anything, and they don't really help anything. God alone heals. And what really chastens me as a talker is how often God is silent. So often God is just content to be silent, even when we wish he would speak. Even when, you know, some of the undergraduate students we're talking with who are kind of going through a season of doubt, they look up at the sky and say, God, why don't you prove yourself? Like, God, if you're real, reveal yourself to me. And God, most often, is just content to not play that game. He is content to remain silent. And we only know this God when we are comfortable with that silence and when we learn from that silence. When we encounter God in silence and realize the silence of God is okay, and for us to cover it up is to obscure something that God might be doing in the silence. So when Merton talks about preaching and writing and teaching being fed by silence. That's what he means. I think, you know, we know a God, we serve a God who doesn't speak compulsively, but a God who is comfortable in silence. And I have to learn to be comfortable in that silence. I have to be comfortable that my words are part of my gift to share. But I have to realize that if I keep speaking compulsively all the time, my words are going to lose their power. I have to keep coming back to that God who dwells in silence. And for me, that's impacted my preaching. It's also impacted the way that when JL and I lead the Emmanuel Scholars discussion, you know, we have a small group discussion. And sometimes you just have to ask a question and let the silence sit there and let that hang on students and let them think. Sometimes they interpret that silence and think, oh, I should have read the book a little closer so I'd have something to say. Or, you know, there's a little discomfort, but you just have to sort of allow the silence to be. And that's something that I'm learning. So anyway, wanted to share that with you today. And thanks for listening to it. JL, you want to introduce our guest?
Yeah, well, listeners, it's just Mike and JL today, but yeah, that's not because we don't have guests waiting to come, but we want to sprinkle in from time to time just some topics that, for whether it's current students that want to hear more about the secrets of what we do in spiritual life on campus, or alum who are connected and know each of us, or alum who have never met either of us or been here since... Mike or I have been involved with the college just to share what's going on. So, Mike, remind the listeners, how long is it you've been dean at the chapel here, dean of the chapel?
So I started in mid-year in 2013, and I was an interim at first. My predecessor, John Britton, served through December of 2012 and then retired in the middle of the year. So I took over for the end of the year as an interim, and then became the full-time dean of the chapel at the end of that semester, and then started in earnest in September of 2013. So in my eighth year, I guess, right. So finishing my seventh full-time year.
Yeah. Wow, there we go. And prior to that, there was a couple spots of pastoral ministry. So it's been, you've called yourself a pastor for how many years?
I mean, I think all told, I was in church pastoral ministry for 10 years, if I include my student years, and then 7 or 8 years, so I guess 17 or 18 years, which sounds crazy.
Like all right. And for those of you who might be pastors listening or know someone who's a pastor, the pastoral role has lots of different responsibilities, just like dean of the chapel.
Sure, right.
So as dean of the chapel, you have lots going on, but the thing that's most widely known is weekly chapel services or 3 times a week. Give the listeners some context. How many chapels do you organize in academic year? How often do you preach? What's the structure we're talking about?
Sure. So there are, depending on how the semester falls, either 41 or 42 chapels every semester. So Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 11:05. And different people approach my job in different ways. So if you met the dean of the chapel from Wheaton or Gordon, they might approach their job really differently. Part of what I love is speaking, so I want to do that more. And some people get into do what I do because they don't really like speaking that much, but they like the kind of pastoral angle. You know, they like talking with students and working with them. I love to speak. So I have arranged it. So this year, mostly Mondays we will have guests from off campus, and Wednesdays we'll have on campus speakers who are not me, and Fridays I will speak.
Okay.
Now that varies by the week, but that's generally how we do it. So I speak close to once a week, except when we have kind of a special, you know, when homecoming comes, for instance. I don't speak homecoming weekend necessarily. So, when there's kind of a special thing that interrupts it, I don't speak that week, but almost once a week.
Okay, so similar to pastoral ministry, and in addition to coordinating other people coming. Now, as you provide leadership for the chapel at Houghton, like you said, the way you imagine it is probably distinct than other places, but what are the guiding principles? You know, why have Chapel to Christian College, or what's the point at Houghton, in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, chapel to me is, well, first I should say this, a Christian college is ideally related to a church. That's part of what I really like about our situation at Houghton. We stand in service to a church, to the Wesleyan Church, a distinct body of believers. And I really value that. But we are not a church, right? So there's a sense of we don't have the same kind of membership requirements for people. Like, if you're going to be a member of a church, you have to be a Christian. And we have students here who are not Christian, or people, we don't have a creedal requirement for our students. Most of our students are Christian, but That's not a requirement. So mm-hmm. we can't and don't aim to be a church. So the way I interpret the role of chapel worship, right, is to have a real consistent kind of time of worship that maybe amplifies or builds on what a church might do or complements what a church might do, but doesn't seek to be a church. So I'm a big believer in the kind of idea of building a rhythm of practice that kind of gets people into a place where they sort of expect three times each week to hear from God in some way. But it looks like a church service in some ways, but it's really kind of distinct from that.
And so there's part of it that also, even though it's distinct from a church service, mm-hmm. that really benefits from it being communal.
Right.
In the sense of, it's not just hear from God. It's not just, mm-hmm. in other words, as I've heard you talk about it, this is not just, I want to make sure three times a week there's some sort of devotional thought that individuals can have it, but there's something about gathering.
Right. No, the gathering is really important. And we try hard to make chapel not, we don't talk about chapel as student programming. Mm-hmm. Work hard to not to say this is not something that I'm providing for students. It's community gathering time. Uh-huh. And so when the community is together, and that's for the sake of without getting too far into the weeds, I mean the question of kind of how do the different parts of the Houghton community work together, right? Mm-hmm. Those of us who have our lives invested in Houghton long term as employees here of the college, we need to worship together, and that when we worship together, that kind of facilitates the kind of short-term members of our community also joining that worship. So, I wouldn't quite say that the faculty staff angle is primary, but it's very important to me that it's also time for faculty and staff to be together.
Yeah. Well, tied in with that, I think some listeners might, think that's a new way to think about things or kind of refreshing. I think one of the jobs of a pastoral shepherding leader is to cast a level of vision. And I'm not talking from a business standpoint. I'm talking a sense of being aware of the needs of your people and being aware of the call of the kingdom and the gospel and saying, I think this is where we could be headed. Mm-hmm. When you think of your job within chapel leadership, what would be your ideal vision for chapel at Houghton? I mean, what would that look like?
Mm-hmm. So sometimes when I'm meeting with prospective students and their parents, I talk about chapel as kind of, or spiritual life in general, as kind of telling them it's not heart work like the head versus the heart, but it's the heart work that allows us to do the head work, right? So it's not heart work like, oh, I've been working my brain and now I got to blow off steam and be with God. Instead, it's that kind of sense of, I need to go and hear who I am from God in the context of loving community. And that enables me then to go into the head work, the work I'm doing to learn and to grow in a different way than I would otherwise, right? And so for me, right, I mean, if this is ideal, if this is working like perfectly,
right.
And I realize like we all, Bonhoeffer talks about not falling in love with your wish dream of a community, but loving the community that is.
Right.
And I love the Houghton that is. Nonetheless, when I kind of go to that place in my wish dream, it really is that place where all of us, like students get that, faculty, staff get that and say, yeah, it's important for us to be together to really hear who we are and discover who we are in relationship with God and each other. And that enables then faculty and staff to really serve students well, like because we recognize, oh, I see the image of God in these students. They're not just, they're not just paying bills that keep me alive. They're not just kind of like allies or obstacles to me having a good day. They're the image of God, blessed young people, 18 to 22 in my life for this short period of time. I've got to love them well, right? And likewise, that those 18 to 22-year-olds would look at their faculty and staff and say, here's someone I can learn from, and not go through that long process and laborious process of like pushing back and saying, I don't know if I can trust. And worship really ought to build that sense of like, I can trust. And so, in my dream world, right, everybody sort of buys into that and really encounter it and doesn't think of chapel as kind of an interruption to the real work that we're doing, but a sense of, yeah, we need to be in the presence of God in order to do this work well.
I just think that I love highlighting the distinction between saying this is an interruption or something that prevents me from doing what I'm supposed to do here, but rather this is a place where the essential resources for the work I need to do well exists here.
Sure, yeah. I mean, this is what's, you know, the Vatican II summation of worship as the source and summit of the church's life, right?
Yeah.
Worship is like the apex of what the church does together. But it's also the source of life. Like, once we worship, then we can go back into the world equipped by worship to do what we're doing. But it's never just a kind of like instrumental kind of thing where, oh, worship kind of fills the tank. Because it really is. At the same time, it's the summit. It's the high point. We've got to do it.
That's great.
And I see it that way. So
I like that. Source and summit. So going out of theoretical back to practical, you plan lots of chapels, 80 plus in an academic year. Each gathering's a bit unique, but what are the constants? What are the foundational pieces that have to be there for a chapel service?
Yeah. So this is the kind of thing where I don't know how this will sound to different generations. I think anybody who matriculated at Houghton under my ministry, matriculated at Houghton under my ministry probably knows what chapel is to them. And that is music, prayer, scripture, message. Most often, like when I'm talking with students now, because we have some services that students plan or other people plan, and most often students are like, okay, so I need to find someone to pray, I need to find someone to read, and they perceive that as almost from handed down on high. It's not. Like, when I started, I sort of thought, what we need in chapel is kind of consistency. Like, we need to, if we want to really come to expect that God will meet us here, part of that is building just kind of a ritual pattern of what that looks like so that we can trust that ritual pattern and lean into it. And so that's kind of how I said, I think this should be the ritual pattern. It's not handed down from on high. I don't have a Bible verse to say, this is what you must do. I just sort of said, yeah, music, reading, scripture, message, that kind of, that suits us. So I think those of you who maybe did not matriculate under my ministry think of chapel, and there were probably lots of different ways of doing chapel, and you might not think of that as necessary. And of course, it's strictly speaking, it's not necessary, but I just kind of wanted to build that pattern. So those are the pieces that we see in almost every chapel service is music, prayer, scripture, and message.
And music wise, you sprinkle in some differences. What's your thought behind the style of music that shows up?
Yeah, I mean, that changes year to year, just depending on the kind of musicians that we have on our campus and some student groups that come and go, and faculty and staff who can be involved some year and who can't some years. So we really want to have as much diversity as we can. I take it pretty seriously that music is the part of the role of chapels to educate about the wide variety of church music that there is. Again, not just hear me plainly, if we go back out to the 30,000 foot level, not for the sake of education per se, but when we know there's lots of different ways to worship, we have that comfort of being part of a really big and diverse family. The way I often talk about this with students who, like if students find traditional hymnody boring, for instance, and there are some students like that, believe it or not, and they'll come and tell me this, and I'll say, you know, part of what reassures you about your family is that you've got a crazy uncle, you know? Like if you're part of a big family, it's wide enough to have some characters in it. And you feel right at home with some people, and you don't with some people, but that's okay. That's part of what it means to be part of a family. And in the same way, right, some of the things that you do are quirky to some other people in the body, and some of the things that they do are quirky to you. But you've got to get to know and love each other's quirks, and that deep down that reassures you that you're part of something bigger than just your own wants or desires. And so we try to have as much diversity as we can in our music so that you experience something outside of your comfort zone with some consistency, but also just enough in your comfort zone that you feel at home.
Yeah.
You know,
I will say, as someone who is regularly at chapel and sometimes part of leadership, but really gets to more be within the student, within the pews, the chairs. I don't know. I don't want to say audience, really.
But right. Yeah.
The gathering community. That there is this sense of trusting the rhythm and being okay when the music is different.
Yeah.
Whether it's the gospel choir is stretching for some people or the hymns for others or even the contemporary music. So,
I mean, today in chapel, I mean, we're recording this Wednesday before it goes live, but, you know, we sang Holy, Holy, Holy in chapel today. And it was just, It was fun. I mean, people were engaged, and yeah. Dr. Kong was on the organ playing with a kind of grand, and students were really involved. You know, they weren't just kind of mumbling their way through. And I thought there are lots of places that would love to know that 19 to 22 year olds are still willing to sing this kind of hymnody and kind of throw themselves into it. It was really a precious time.
Yeah. Well, I've got a whole string of questions here. We're not going to have enough time for all of them, but I'm going to ask the one that I think is a burning one. What are your thoughts on chapel attendance requirements? So for those of you who are distant alum, I don't know how long this has been standing, but it's two-thirds chapels.
Two-thirds. You have to attend two-thirds of the chapels through the semester.
But, I mean, there's backs and forths, there's pros and cons, there's opinions students have, but straight from the mouth of the dean of the chapel.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on it? Why do you still have it?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I mean, like all rules, it descends into legalism very quickly. And so I acknowledge that when students, and just so you know, like, I mean, this, it was the same rule when I was a student in the late 90s. And then I was one of the students frustrated that we were requiring chapel. And so every so often students revisit this every few years and they think that they're the first generation to think of it. And no, in fact, that question has been going on for a long time. For me, I think required chapel makes sense in terms of helping to build a habit, right? Like I tell students the role of habits in our spiritual formation is really connected to, we can think about it in terms of like lunch, for instance. Like we get hungry every day at 12 o'clock, regardless of whether we've just eaten at 10 or whether it's been 8 o'clock since we've eaten, because we're just accustomed to eating at that time. And so because of that, we seize the power of habits to really shape the way that we intuit the world. And so we talk like and say, in the same way, it helps you to build a habit of being with other people and with God at a given time if you want to build a hunger to get to know God. And I say, you know, we, and you know this, there's like a suite of things we do on campus to help students build those habits and rhythms. So we have, like we always say at the end of the podcast, we have morning prayer and we have communion and there's mercy seat. There's all these ways that you can do it. We say, the only habit I'm asking you to build is this little one. You know, this is just enough of a rule that you can try to build a habit and experience a little bit of what we're talking about. But I acknowledge, of course, like all rules, it can descend into legalism, and it's nothing... There's nothing magical about a two-thirds requirement that makes God look at you and smile because, oh, yes, that's my favorite kid because they went to two-thirds of chapel or even more, you know. But that kind of habit building is really healthy.
Yeah. And, you know, I think some of our listeners may remember or think of what the college has referred to as alternative chapel credits, which have been places where you could get a chapel credit for something that was outside of chapel. And those... are becoming fewer and fewer, and I think maybe, I don't think this was something you were trying to intentionally take care of, but I think there's something different about what's happening Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
Yeah, I mean, we don't want to erode trust in that Monday, Wednesday, Friday rhythm, right? So it's fine to have some things that we sort of dangle a carrot to say you can have a chapel credit if you come to it. But it's really important for us because we don't want to degenerate into a kind of like spiritual life credit that you accumulate in any number of ways that works for you. Because that, deep down, we believe anyway, kind of leaves, it's very individual, right? And it leaves you with a menu trying to figure out, how do I want to get my spiritual needs met? As opposed to, here's our way of doing this together that characterizes who we are as a community. So, yeah.
So, I want to conclude with the last two questions I have here, but lots of times... I find working with college students, it could be easy to just use your natural maturity as being a bit older as just enough to stand up on and be more Christian mature, more mature in your faith without really allowing the relationship with them to shape you.
Yeah.
What's it like as dean of the chapel and providing leadership for chapel? How does it impact your spiritual life? Because I don't think you're just relying on the fact that you're a number of years older than the students and so you can just wing it, but you actually as a pastoral presence are vulnerable and the formation's happening both ways. But how's it impacted your spiritual life?
Yeah, I mean, I guess a couple of ways. I mean, one, and I think if there are pastors listening, they'll appreciate this. There's a way that to live this out in front of people makes it sink into you a little more, right? So in some ways, I've always been in love with this kind of vision. I shouldn't say always, you know, but as I kind of grew in the faith, I fell in love with this idea of, oh, you know, I should pray the hours. I should build habits, right? It's hard to do that on your own. But when you sort of say, oh, I think that will help this body if we do this. And so I'll commit to being there 4 out of 5 mornings at 7:30 in the morning to lead morning prayer. I mean, that has demonstrably helped me to just, my body is committed to be present at that time. And so I can't flake out. and so for me, that's really important. So I think that's probably the main way I'd answer your question. I think also just as you stand up in front of folks and realize, I can vulnerably lead these folks. You know, as you do that and as you see lives change, you grow in confidence in that. You know, the first few steps into this vision, I think, of trying this out were really scary because you just think, like, if this falls apart or if I end up looking like a total flake by leading with my heart this way, you know, it would be much easier for me to creep behind some academic credentials and try to prove my wit in the classroom. But leading with my heart, it's risky, but it's less risky now. Does that make sense? Like, I've grown enough that I know that this will work. I know. And so I feel much more confident that way.
That's good. And I hope listeners have been encouraged and learned a lot, or maybe they have more questions and we can circle back another episode. But but we're always connecting with alum, parents, friends of the college. Mm-hmm. How would you imagine them best supporting your work within the chapel program?
Yeah, I think, I mean, pray mostly. I think that's important. But I also would say, like, if you want to be more directive in the way that you pray, I mean, get in touch with me. And each year we put together a morning prayer book, for instance. It means a lot to know that there are Houghton alums around the world who use that. You know, each year I send out a little, you know, do you want to pray along with us to our alumni email group and get, you know, 30, 40, 50 mm-hmm. responses. And I don't pretend that all of them are praying every morning with us. But that idea that those books are out there, this kind of Houghton way of doing things is floating around the world and there are people participating, that means a ton. So yeah, that's a way to be involved. And feel free to listen if you're on the chapel website. You can see chapel recordings and a live stream there. And every so often I've got friends who write in and say, oh, listen to chapel today. It was really good. Thanks for your message. Or thanks for that. So that's a good feeling too.
And if you are in the area, please come and join us for chapel.
Yep, absolutely.
Monday, Wednesday, absolutely. Friday, 11:05. And I think, I know this is going to sound interesting, but like sometimes we do have chapels where sometimes mm-hmm. we have a guest that is prominent or coming in for a major lecture. Yep. And those sometimes will attract off-campus guests, but sometimes come to a regular chapel.
Yeah,
And see and experience. And so... Well, thanks, Mike, for letting me pepper you with these questions.
Well, thanks for asking.
Yeah. I'm gonna shift to the calendar for the campus week, and then we'll close out. Well, as we record this, there's a lot of unknown with the coronavirus and colleges. Yeah. But right now, we are just moving forward as far as podcast, as far as podcast hosts. Mm-hmm. We're moving forward as things are normal, but we do trust that the people in Knowledge at Houghton are making wise decisions mm-hmm. For the safety of our campus. But right now, all as of this Wednesday evening, as we record, ready to launch for Monday, all is well. And we're planning for campus this week to be busy.
Yep.
So it is the peak of the semester here at Houghton. Tennis, lacrosse, they have games Tuesday night, baseball, men's tennis, women's lacrosse on Wednesday. All of the sporting events are on the Houghton website, and the athletic website even has live streaming for events. Wednesday is also our Chamberlain Lecture Series, which is an annual lectureship in the area of missions. And this year we have Alan Yeh, professor of missiology at Biola. Recently heard his bio read, an impressive mm-hmm, work mm-hmm. and writing that he does.
Yep.
And on Thursday, we are glad to welcome to campus Republican Congressman Tom Reed. He'll be here at 5 p.m. for a dialogue about bipartisan solutions to the climate crisis. Another really interesting place for our students to engage or people in the area. And Houghton Music is always busy in the spring semester mm-hmm. because the musicians have spent mm-hmm. all year preparing and working on pieces. Yep. And Friday night, the Houghton Symphony Orchestra has a concert, and it'll feature winners of the concerto and aria competition held by the Great Batch School of Music here at Houghton. First place winner, Hannah Hawes, is a senior piano major, and she is playing Mozart's Piano Concerto No. 23 in A major. And runner-up, Kylie Tomaselli, who is a senior percussion major, will be playing Emmanuel Séjourné, I believe, right?
Séjourné's
Concerto for Marimba, will be fascinating if you can hear or see, both accompanied by the orchestra.
Yeah, I would love to have you here for those events. Just as a reminder, as we close, thanks for listening today. We, as always, are reaching out to you to pray for and support the work of Houghton College. We are privileged to live in a place that allows us this chance to do community together, gives us time to worship, and gives us time to learn and grow. So we're very thankful for it and continue to ask for your help to make it happen and hope that it bears fruit for you. If you value the work of Houghton, please find a way to pitch in and help us, pray for us, send us your students, share your ideas with us. We want to be a witness to the world about what a healthy, living and learning, Christian learning community can look like. In addition, just a reminder that we would love to pray for you. Every morning at 7:30, as we've said, we gather in the Marjorie Payne Prayer Chapel for morning prayer. And at 3:45, we have daily communion, coronavirus permitting. during that time, we want to pray for the Houghton community, and that includes you, whether you're an alum or a current student or whether you're just someone listening to this podcast. So email us at podcast@houghton.edu if you would like to share concerns with us. Things we can pray for, ways we can be support, and we'd love to do that with you and for you. As we offer the benediction that we use each morning at morning prayer, we'll bless you now.
May the peace of the Lord Christ go with you wherever he may send you. May he guide you through the wilderness and protect you through the storm. May he bring you home rejoicing at the wonders he has shown you. May he bring you home rejoicing once again into our doors.
You have been listening to Bursting the Bubble, the podcast of Houghton College. For questions or comments on this program, email podcast@houghton.edu. Bursting the Bubble is a production of Houghton College. For more information about Houghton College, visit www.houghton.edu.